Make back, I'm praying for you.
Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer, up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please set phasers to stun. Silence all cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might actually be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening we're on step four, and the way that we do it in this group, we'll actually whack up step four in two meetings. Tonight we'll talk mainly about the resentments portion of step four, and then next week the really fun one, fear and sex. But no, all right, serious crowd tonight. I see. So we always like to say, too, at the beginning, forgive me for shuffling papers here, that we're not sitting here before you as experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not here to teach anybody anything. We're just basically trying to go through. Let's take a look at what the book says about the step and share our experience with that. And very grateful to have Alfred, who's come all the way from Yorktown, to share with us tonight. I'm going to start off on page 64. So let's just read a little bit. I don't want to read you to death, but we're going to do this one paragraph. Next. Oops, excuse me. We are actually at the bottom of 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. So the way that this was kind of shared with me, Bill does a great job telling us why we have to do something, what the purpose is, when to do it, the attitude to bring to the task, and he uses a lot of time-sensitive language in here, like at once and immediately and so forth. And it was one of the things that I love about. Let's talk about where we've been so far. We're coming up on this fourth step. So presumably we've done the first three. We've come here. We've learned what's wrong with us. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and all it really means to me is once I start drinking, I can't stop, and when I stop, the clock's just ticking until I start again. And left to my own devices, I will in fact drink again. So the question is, if I have a desire to stop, how do I do that? And you guys pointed out to me when I got here that, by the way, David, if you're an alcoholic, you got a problem that you yourself can't solve. You're going to try to solve it, but you won't be able to. And that's why we're here, and we can help. And I summarily dismissed that notion. I was 22 years old. I wasn't powerless over anything. And I spent the next 6 years coming in and out of here, trying to switch the pieces around. You know, I can see where tequila is a problem. Crack's certainly going to get in the way of my career goals. So I just, you know, maybe just Budweiser on Friday nights, you know. I just tried moving. I tried everything I could. Not drinking, gym memberships, the psychiatrist, the new girlfriend, new job, back to the gym again, back to the diet and exercise. I shared it in here before, but I called my sister one time and I said, I figured it out. And she's like, what? And I said, vitamins. She goes, you're crazy. And I'm like, no. I'd read a book, you know, and I got a blender out and there's brewer's yeast and baby spinach and cranberry juice going in there and rum. And it's a remarkable concoction because you really do feel a lot better after you drink it. You know, this is really good. I'm really glad I'm on this new health kit. You know, so I tried all that stuff. And so I basically, it took 6 years for me to just accept that I can't solve the problem. And I'd seen enough of you guys and I'd heard enough of you guys that I had some hope that if I did what you guys did, then maybe, just maybe, it would work for a guy like me. And I started to get a sponsor in a home group and started to walk this thing off. And you guys made step three really easy for me. It was like, because I had a lot of questions about God and I thought I had to understand God before I could move on. And you guys told me to stop thinking and just make a decision to get on with the rest of the steps. And the consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you, David. All right, you know. And so on we go. And I find myself in a very short period of time willing to write this inventory. So it's interesting to me when he just basically says, next we launched into a course of vigorous action, this personal house cleaning, which I know I had never attempted. I had your inventory pretty well, never my own. I'm always the hero in my stories, by the way. You don't come out so good in my stories. But this thing, the sponsor pointed me as though our decision, and he told me the decision he's talking about, David, is this third step, this decision to turn your will and your life over, is vital and crucial, but it could have little permanent effect unless, when, at once, followed by what kind of an effort? A strenuous effort to face and be rid of. So basically, he was just told me the third step's going to wear off, David, unless you continue to do this thing. And that's what I get. And it also hints that we're about to get down to causes and conditions. This liquor drinking is just a symptom of your problem. It's a significant symptom, causes a lot of collateral damage. But what you guys have always told me is that if I do what you guys do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll be transformed into somebody who's not interested in drinking. And having not had that experience before, I didn't believe you, but I really felt I had no other choice. So I'm willing. What do I do now? Alfred?
Hi, my name is Alfred. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. It's really good to be here tonight. I'll thank Graham for asking me.
You got to shout.
Oh, is that better?
Yeah, use your big boy voice.
Okay. Talk from the diaphragm.
Project.
All right. I feel like I'm in a Star Trek movie right now. Let's see. Yeah, I'll qualify real quick like David. The basic thing for me was, once I took a drink, I didn't have any control over the amount I was going to take. And when I wanted to stop, I could not. I would just go until I was done or ran out. And even if I ran out, that wouldn't mean anything. I could still figure out some way to avoid drinking and driving and figure out how to get a cab to get me to the liquor store or, you know, just figure out these ways to get myself around and about. And if I didn't have the enough money, I would scrounge for pocket change to get a cab so I could go to the liquor store and use my credit card, because I was going willing to go to any lengths to get drunk. I would also make myself throw up so I could drink more. I didn't particularly want to do that, but it was 10 o'clock on a Friday night, so I figured, what the hell, you know? I figured if you got an eating problem and you throw up, that's pretty sick. But if you want to throw up so you can keep drinking, that's all right by me, you know? That makes perfectly sense. And now looking back, I'm like, that doesn't make sense at all, you know? It's like, one gift of sobriety I found was my dental health and my eyesight have gotten a lot better, so, because I'm not throwing up all the time. And I got the nickname of Ralfred because I threw up at parties all the time and blew my lunch all the time, so I guess if nothing else, that qualifies me too. Anyways, about this four-step business, I really had to find out that I was an alcoholic before any of that would do anything for me. Because my first meeting, I saw the wall hangings with the steps on them, and I heard the steps read, and I was like, I don't know about all that. It was just enough to get me to a meeting, to get me into the doors. And I think how I was 12-step into the meeting was the two people making the coffee. All they did was they talked about how they drank, how they felt, and how they acted. And when I first walked in, the church bulletin said the meeting started at 7, so I walked up to it at 6:59. And there was nobody there except those two people. And I was like, I walked in, I hesitated, and they said, are you looking for Bill or something? And I was like, I think I'm in the wrong place. And he goes, are you here for the AA meeting? And I said, yes. And they proceeded to talk to me. And I had no idea what the steps were. I just got a white chip because I saw Michael Keaton do that in Clean and Sober. and I did that, and then I admitted I was an alcoholic, and I got a big book, and I poured out all my liquor when I got home and just went to meetings for a while. And I was on what people call the pink cloud or the feel-good part. I don't know. It was just kind of different living without alcohol. And the thing I heard that really rang true with me that first night was, you don't have to drink just for today. Because I was always quitting for my whole life. And that's the ultimate goal here. But that made sense to me. Don't quit. I mean, just quit for today. And so that's what I did. I went home, dumped out all my beer and liquor, made a phone call, read some of the big book that I was instructed to, and I just kept going to meetings. And then after a while, I got, you know, irritable, restless, and discontented that the doctor's opinion talks about, because not drinking wasn't enough. And that's when I got a sponsor who started taking me through the steps. Now, my first journey through the steps was a mixed bag of 12 and 12, living sober, the big book. And when we got to, you know, it was like figuring out I was powerless over alcohol was easy. And then it was a little difficult finding out that my life was unmanageable. And then it was like, did I believe in something? Well, yeah. So we skipped over We Agnostics. And then I found myself in the 12 and 12, though. So I was able to move on. And then my sponsor at the time was like, why don't we read through the pages 60 to 63, you know, stop at, you know, the third step prayer and read that for a while, and then we'll go on. So what I did was, like, I'm going to be an A student. So it's a trick. You know, he wants me to read further. And so I read into the inventory part, and I got freaked out. And he said, what did I tell you to do? Stop there. You know, it's like a good alcoholic or person, I don't listen very well. I think I know what's best for me and what I need to do. And that wasn't the case at all. So finally, we went and did the third step prayer in a church, and then I did not launch out on the course of vigorous action. I waited about 6 weeks until I got crazy again. But then one night I was sitting on the porch of my house, and what happened was my sponsor was going out of town. So I was like, got really crazy, and like when I'm ready to do something, I got to get it done right away. And nothing was coming to me, so I went out on my porch and on my stoop and smoking a cigarette, and then it all just started coming out. I just started writing a list of stuff. And but like David was talking about, let me get on the right page, it could have little permanent effect. And that was what was happening to me. I was just starting to you know, the third step prayer was an experience, but then to keep that going, I had to do some writing, which I wasn't doing. So it started to spin out of control a little bit. And then it's always like funny when you're at a step, that seems to be the topic of a meeting or somebody brings it up. And I don't know about you, but sometimes the hair on my neck starts to stand up and, or I get cringe or my stomach gets upset and I'm like, oh boy. But we're trying to find those things that are blocking us. And like it says, liquor was but a symptom. And it kind of gives us some clues to what we're going to do here. It says, you know, we're going to list stuff we're resentful at, the list of the things that are blocking us. Getting down to causes, column three, and conditions. We're going to look at those things. But I didn't realize, because I was still at that point that drinking was my problem. And really, that's just a symptom. And I had to be shown that and keep being shown that. So I think we'll, I'll pass. I don't know, is that the correct terminology here?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to continue on 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which had caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. And then, as I mentioned before, we're going to talk about just three. Tonight, we're just going to talk about one of the three, but there's resentment, fear, and selfish sex conduct. So tonight we're going to focus on resentments, but there's a lot of, you know, my first four step, I mean, was just shrouded in mystery. I mean, I just really found it to be, I couldn't find anybody to give me a straight answer on it. Of course, I was sponsoring myself and actually I had a sponsor, but I'd ask him about it and say, well, you know, just write down things that are bothering you. He had a real laid back view on the whole thing, but it seemed like you'd go to a meeting and you'd hear, well, I write a short story of my life, or I did this, and or I went out and I wrote a list of, you know, everything I'd ever done and thought and said, and then me and my sponsor burned it, and I'm trying to find that in the book. I can't find it. And so I just did what I do best is my number one and my number two coping strategy for dealing with life is postpone and avoid. So if it can be postponed, I will. If it can be avoided, I absolutely will. And so I just went around like that until I like you were talking about, the restless, irritable discontent. But there's no mystery in what he lays out in the book. He basically says that we're going to do exactly the same thing that a business does. We're going to just look honestly at what's on your shelf, David. You know, what are you bringing to the table? What have you brought? What's caused you problems in the past? Let's just look at that. We're not going to judge it. Of course, we're going to judge it. But we don't have to, you know, we don't, you know, you just relieve, you know, relieve you of that worry, you know, let's just see what's there, you know, because I can't fool myself about values. And I always think about, so, and why do I want to do this? So that I can disclose damaged and unsaleable goods. I can get rid of them promptly and without regret. Like one of the things that, and we read in here that we have to get rid of our old ideas, you know, right? Well, that makes a lot of sense. What, how do you do that? You know, I got to get rid of all my old ideas. What are you doing, David? I'm getting rid of all my old ideas. I've just made a decision. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you do that? Well, this is the mechanism. Because if I don't know what the old ideas are, how do they have a chance of changing? You know, like when I got here, I really thought that sarcasm was a character asset. You know, I valued it in me, and I was attracted to sarcastic people. Oh, you're going to love this guy. He's sarcastic. You know, and I come to find out that sarcastic, the Greek or Latin root of that word is to cut or tear flesh. It's a destructive, corrosive sort of an activity. But, you know, hey, it's just good sport where I come from. So I fool myself about all kinds of values, you know. Procrastination, for example, it's good to avoid paying that bill. I got more money in my pocket today. So it just basically says we're going to do the exact same thing in our lives. We're just going to look at what's there. That's all I get from that.
All right, thanks. And I like, you know, my first time through the book, it was like, oh, they got step three and step four, but where's step one and two? Because it was until I read through this thing with a sponsor and stuff that I actually find out, well, the steps are in the big book. You know, it's like, it's not hidden. It just, I wasn't looking. And this is step four, taking a commercial effect, finding effect, facing process. Because, I mean, if I've got, it's like when I was living in Alabama, we worked for the, I worked for the Marriott Food Services, and outside of like the first difficult question I got asked when I was there was, you like Alabama or Auburn? And it's like I had to make a quick decision, and luckily I chose wisely. But but we were responsible for stocking the supplies for the at athletic events you have concession stands. That's the word I'm looking for. And we're responsible for stocking that. Now, the guy gave us instructions of what to buy and what not to buy. And so it's like we bought stuff that we weren't supposed to buy because we liked it. But it didn't sell, so we had to figure out what to do with it. And it's almost like this. It's like we're trying to figure out what's gonna sell at the concession stand and what's not. I mean, the concession stand in my life and my soul, the stuff I'm keeping stock. You know, Twizzle sticks or Swizzle sticks aren't as popular as Snickers bars, so maybe I should stock up on Snickers bars instead of the big tubes of sugar. So, anyways, but I got to look at what's going on in myself, and this business about unsaleable goods, I carry a lot of baggage that's not useful to me or anybody, and I hold on to it like a stinky, smelly blanket. It's just stuff that I'm so used to carrying around with me that I don't know what to do with it. It's just become part of my makeup. And I don't know it's a problem. But until I look at it, you know, some people might point out, hey, you got a stinky, smelly blanket there. You're dragging a loaded diaper behind you. And it's like, and I don't, hey, I'm used to the smell by now. So it's like, I don't see that stuff. Until I go through this process, then I'm like, oh man, that did stink. but we're, and the one big thing about this step is like, I'm just writing right now. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not sharing it with anybody. I'm just writing. And that's the thing I had to get clear on. And I'm on the step I'm on. I'm not on step 9. I'm not on step 12. I'm on step 4. I overcomplicate the hell out of stuff. But it's just like keeping it simple. And let's see. And we want to get rid of stuff that's not useful. Damn right. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. And I you know, it's like going through this, I got to ask myself, what are my values? What are those things that I live under? Codes, or what do I hold true? But we did first we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. And I don't want to look at what's causing my failure. It's very easy for me in the first couple of columns of this to find out what you're doing. And like it was shared with me, or if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. If it's still you who's causing all the grief and difficulties, then there's nothing for me to work with because I'm great. I'm wonderful and perfect. It's all you people that need to change. And that's not the case at all. I can't change anybody. But what happens through the steps is my perception and my outlook of other people changes. And that's the important thing for me. And there we go with this self business again. And we see it, all the manifestations on page 62. And it just says, driven by 100 forms of self-fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. And here it is bringing it up again. Being convinced the self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We consider it as common manifestations. And like Dave was talking about, we're getting into resentment tonight. And I like what you said about sarcasm being evil and cutting. I mean, fear, like lots of times my sarcasm comes out of fear. And we're not on fear tonight, but it's the evil and corroding thread. Because like when I'm like nervous or feel undergunned, I mean, sarcasm is a quick thing to unleash on somebody. And it's always, when it comes out, it's like, oops. That's usually when my heart comes out of my bottom. And it's like, man, why did I do that, you know? But anyways, at this point, this is being convinced, so I should be convinced that something's going on inside of me. So we're about to look at those things, and we're going to consider them. So,
okay. Thanks. So we're going to keep going on page 64, and he starts using some pretty strong language here. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For not only have we been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed the people, institutions, and principles with whom we are angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, which were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, security, our ambitions, personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? So now the rubber's gonna start to meet the road here. It is kind of confusing because the book has three columns. And the first thing that my sponsor told me was to divide a sheet of paper in half, long ways, and cut that in half, cut that in half, draw a line across the top. I'm mad at so-and-so, person, place, or thing, because. And there's some very interesting things in here. I mean, number one offender, and he uses words like destruction, more alcoholics than anything else, stem all forms of spiritual disease. I'm like, come on, there's got to be some other source of spiritual disease. You know, I'm already starting to argue. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. But this is fantastic, and in my worthless opinion, this is the greatest promise in this book. And basically, up until page 64, all we've talked about is being bodily and mentally different. You know, having a body that craves alcohol once I put it in it, beyond, you know, there's develops a thirst that will never be satisfied. You know, you pick my head up in the parking lot at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, "Can I help you, sir?" I'm just like, "Yeah, get me a drink." You know, I'm just not ever, I'd never get enough. And then I'm mentally obsessed with getting another drink. But now he says, for not only have we been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. This is the first time he mentions this. And then listen to this. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And isn't it interesting that when I'm trying to solve my problems, I attack the mental and the physical first. I don't go after it spiritually. I go after it mentally. I buy a book. I go to the psychiatrist. I want you to tell me. I start watching documentaries or something. I want some information that's gonna solve my problem. Or physically, I stop drinking and I go to the gym and the diet and the vitamins, with the rum, without the rum, whatever. I start going after the mental and physical. I just need more exercise. I need a hobby. I never get to the root of the problem. And he's just point blank telling me that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So why don't I, hey David, genius, why don't you concentrate on the spiritual development? Oh, how do I do that? We're doing it. We're working these steps. This is your roadmap. You've been looking for one all your life. David.
Yeah, I have, but I wouldn't admit it to you.
So basically, we listed the people, principles, institutions with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. So it becomes a relatively simple exercise. When I'm working with somebody, the way that I was taught was just basically brainstorm a list of everything you're mad at. And then once you got a list of just nouns, you know, mom and dad and brother and sister, everybody I've ever worked for, my best friend in fourth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, you know, I just got a list of names. You don't have to hide it. You don't have to protect it. You don't have to, you know, keep it secret or anything. It's just a list of names. And then when you feel like you've got that, then you start transferring it over. I'm working one right now. Guess what? I've been sober for 23 years. I've been married to the same woman for 20. We have 3 children together. Guess who gets the top spot on my resentment list? I'm mad at my wife right now because she committed her time, a significant chunk of time, weeks in this summer, to a project without discussing it with me. It affects my life. We're raising children together. We're partners. And she has said yes to something. She made a huge commitment. And guess what? I found out about it when a 13-year-old girl came up and told me how excited she was to be involved in the project. And I'm like, that's great. What project? Oh, you know, the summer thing, the play at the Generic Theater. I was like, first I've heard of it. So I'm embarrassed, and I'm hurt is really the thing. I'm just really hurt in my gut. And how does that manifest in my life? Rage. I don't like show up and go, my feelings have been deeply hurt. I'm like, good, but what I did about it, because I've been here before, this is not new territory, was I just had to remove myself from the situation. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to go do something else. And I got involved in some other things yesterday afternoon. Jill is here. I admitted to fantasizing about moving to Maine. That was like an hour and a half of my day. Thinking about, you know, draining the bank accounts, getting on the motorcycle, and going to Maine. It's going to be better up there, you know? And it's going to be a holy celibate life, you know? And I talked myself out of that part. But anyway, so that's how I spent my day. And then a couple of new guys, or one new guy called me, wanted to go to a meeting. I ended up going to a meeting. The whole time, all I did was kept my mouth shut. For now, that's all I can do, keep my mouth shut. But my gears are turning, you know? I get home at 10 o'clock. It's like, how you doing? I'm good. You're biting on my lip, you know? Don't sleep too well, right? So this is how the last 24 hours have been going. But I'm going to work the whole thing from left to right with you tonight if we have time. So, but that's all I'm doing. I'm mad at my wife. She committed her time without talking to me, embarrassed me. Okay? And what I would suggest is that if you pull up a bar stool anywhere tonight in America, this is what we're going to find. We're going to find column A and column B. I'm mad at this guy, and here's why. I'm mad at the boss because, and if you're buying the drinks, I'll listen to your column B. And I'll agree with you. You're right. That guy's an SOB. You're a saint for putting up with that. Let's get another round over here. That's what's happening. Column A and column B, and I spend my whole life there. Column B. I'm mad at you because you did me wrong because. So now we're starting to get it down on paper, and it's starting to get a little silly, isn't it? Oh, she committed her time, and she embarrassed you. Well, shouldn't have. But it's already starting to kind of lose its luster. Alfred?
Yeah, I like what you were talking about. Where do we start? We did exactly the same thing, or resume is the number? Okay.
We did this paragraph.
From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. And I like it. Resentment is the number one offender. It, resentment, destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. And like when you reminded me, like I would do the same thing, would try to go for walks and get physically fit to overcome my alcoholism. And one of the funnest ones was me and my friend. It was a Friday afternoon. I was living in Alabama, and we decided to hit the gym really hard, and we lifted these insane weights. And then it was like crazy. I said, man, I feel pretty good now. And then we went, what do? We go to the Classic store and get a crap load of beer and liquor, and then we party all night. So the next morning I wake up with a 3-alarm hangover, and I'm like, can't move physically because I lifted so much weight. And that didn't help. I still had a spiritual malady that couldn't be overcome. And one time I decided to take up bike riding again. And it was like, I rode a bike all the time when I was a kid. I can go up and down these hills. I spend $100 to get my bike retrofitted and updated. And then I go riding around for an hour. And then I get off the bike and I couldn't walk. So I got a cure for that. I'm going to drink now. So I put the bike up and didn't ride it for a while. So it's like I got all these plans and ideas to try to overcome my spiritual illness. And the mental stuff and the physical stuff, I went to doctors, tried to get put on stomach medicine. No, it's not the shots of liquor I do when I get home from work. It's I'm traveling a lot, so I'm eating a lot of fast food and rich food. I'll get put on stomach medication for that. Or mentally, I went to see a shrink once. Or just talk to the priest at the church about drinking, you know. It's like, but it wasn't anything with depth and weight. And and I like that promise, you know, we recover mentally and physically once the spiritual malady is overcome. Because to me, mental and physical is easy. It's tangible. It's something that I can try to do something about, but I'm not successful at it. without, you know, help of a power greater than me in this process, which is the only thing that worked. I, like David, had to put resentments on paper. And like people, institutions, or principles. The first one was people and institutions. I don't think I really understood the principle part of it. But people was easy, you know, you, him, Jim, you know, whatever. And then the institutions, well, I'm mad at the VA because they didn't approve my loan. I'm mad at the church because of this. And, you know, if you don't, et cetera, et cetera. But principles was shown to me. They're like codes that I live under, or my whole life, values that I considered, or morals I tried to live by, or lies I told about myself that I never really looked at. And that was something new recently that I've done in my inventory. And then going through that, once I get the list of people, then it's like David, and then I go to the second column. I can write one of my sponsors said, just, you can get as juicy as you want in the second column because it's all about everybody else, and that's where the pen can flow, and you can get all your anger and whatever out there. And then we get into the third column. Do we get to that yet? Or
Yeah. It's down here.
And it's just, we're asking ourselves questions. These are the and/or questions, you know. Self-esteem, and I always get them confused, but one of them is about how I see myself, and one of them is how others see me, and one's pride and one's self-esteem, and then ambitions, you know, what do I want out of the situation, security, what do I need to be okay, and those things, those are the things that affect me into my life, and but I'm still just external at that point until I get to the other part where I'm looking at myself. So, and yeah, I get burned up pretty quickly too. Do we read on our grudge list? Yeah, we did that. So yeah,
we can move on.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's ramble on.
Ramble on, Rose. So on this little grudge list here, again, with my wife, she committed her time and she embarrassed me, or I felt embarrassed because of her actions. And any time I get into this area with my significant other, just about all those things are affected. My self-esteem is, of course, affected by this action. My security, both emotional and financial, are affected. That decision happens to impact my time and availability to actually go out and earn a living. My personal ambitions, this is one that shows up more and more often the more that I write inventory, because I used to see myself as sort of a, altruistic kind of person. I didn't have a lot of personal ambition, you know, I'm here for you kind of guy, right? And but in fact, I've got a personal ambition in all of this. I really want, it's my personal ambition that I participate in a cooperative, facilitative relationship with this woman. I want to be a partner. I want to have a partner. And the thing about personal ambitions is if they're noble and right and just and good, oh boy, look out, get out of my way when I have a good ambition, you know, because it's, damn it, it's the right thing to do, you know, and I will make you understand that. But there's my self-esteem is in there, my security, emotional and financial, my personal ambitions. Of course, my sex relations are affected. There weren't even words spoken between us last night, much less anything else. So it's the whole ball of wax is affected. And I found out the first time I did this inventory, I found the very simple thing that I found out as I worked this, it's like, wow, if you embarrass me, I want to kill you. That's a rather extreme example. And then I noticed when we get into the last column, where had I been selfish? Embarrassing people is one of my stock in trades. I love to embarrass people in front of other people. I don't love it. I wouldn't admit anything like that because I'm much better now. But it seems to flow pretty naturally to me. So I'm capable. That was the first thing I learned. I am capable of despising you for the very things that I do routinely. Now I'm starting to see why I'm having trouble getting along in the world. So we're starting to burn up time. So let's bump down a little bit. So we turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared. Now you got to have a list to turn back to it, right? So we turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. That's a pretty interesting promise or pointer. Key to the future. We are prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that these people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended us, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will, not mine, be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. So, there it is. And I have to ask myself, am I willing to look at this from an entirely different angle? You know? It's like, all I know is that I'm mad at her. And my self-esteem and my security and my emotional, financial ambitions and sex relations have been interfered with. Am I prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle? Perhaps she's spiritually sick. Well, I've known her for a long time. It's not hard for me to agree with that. I know I'm spiritually sick. We both kind of suffer from a lot of the same things that human beings suffer from. But am I willing to look at her in that way? And a lot of times, I'll actually just sort of imagine her like in a hospital bed, like in traction, and in a whole like body cast, you know? And the only thing available is like her face, you know? And I imagine myself with a cool cloth, just kind of comforting her and swabbing her skin and speaking gently to her. This is how I would treat someone who is sick, right? I would speak softly to them. I would speak encouraged. Is there anything I can get for you? Is there anything I can do for you? And just, I don't know, I think in pictures, I don't know if that helps anybody, but it lowers the temperature. I can feel myself just that rage that I've already, you know, admitted to having, just kind of dissipating, and I start to see that it's kind of silly. But no matter what, no matter how I'm feeling, my actions, my words and my deeds can still be kind. My words and deeds can still be considerate. You know, I don't have to turn the tables over. I don't have to break the window to get your attention, because that's what I think I need to do. I wanted to drive my car through the foyer of the brand new theater at the Norfolk Collegiate School last night, and I imagined the shattering glass coming down, and I imagined me saying, "Have I got your attention now? Anybody paying attention to me?" This is what goes on in my mind, right? But I don't do any of that. I leave, I drive away, and I start to pray. God, help me. Save me from being angry. Help me to view this as a sick person. Help me to be kind and decent. Right? Now, as I've already said, the best that I could do was to not make it worse. You know, I didn't say anything kind last night. I didn't say anything unkind. It was just a neutral sort of push, you know. But that was the best I could do. If I could have done better, I would have done better. And I have done much worse in my life. My track record is pretty heinous in that department. My kids have never seen me drunk, but they have seen me throw my keys against the wall. God damn it. Grouch in the brainstorm. So, the invitation is to inventory. He's asking me or inviting me to take a different attitude. Why don't you look at it from an entirely different angle? Why don't you pray? He's given me several actions that I can take part in today with the thing that I'm mad at right now and practice.
Alfred? Thanks. You're looking at it from an entirely different angle. Because this is where I start to shift to you, to me from you and from the outside to the inside. And we got this written inventory and we're starting to see the people and things dominated us, and I like the fancy to real, because I can fancy a lot of stuff in my head, because I got a pretty creative alcoholic mind that can come up with some all sorts of crazy BS. And these do have the power to kill. I mean, I kept drinking, and if I And I guess if I don't deal with this stuff, I'll go back to drinking. Like, I left a couple, one thing off my first inventory that I almost drank over. But due to the craving coming back, I called my sponsor and cleared it up. And then the craving and the obsession left. So that's the beauty of this. I got to experience that. And the very next night, I was at a meeting in Kentucky, and this guy was saying, hey, I don't think I need to write or share everything on my fourth step. I'm like, well, I just had this experience last night. And I'm just a messenger at that point. I share my experience, strength, and hope. What people do with it at that point is entirely up to them. And one of the things my sponsor, we were talking about, was being free of resentment. The definition of forgiveness is to cease to feel resentment against an offender, to give up claim to that. And I'm also being asked to stop being angry at these people's symptoms, because I've got, you know, alcohol was my symptom, and people would get, you know, have sometimes pity and patience and tolerance with me. And then I'm getting asked to show pity, patience, and tolerance for other people. Like, my best example of this is, like, I had a friend of mine living with me. We've been friends since high school. I thought, boy, it'd be great. It'd be just like the old times. Well, one, that was then, this is now. He was going through a divorce, and he had other stuff going on. And I set the ball in motion by not sitting down talking with him about setting timetables and what I expect, because it's my house. I just said, hey, it's open-ended. So that's where I was at fault. That's what I didn't look at. But there came a point where I was ready to shoot him or kick him out of my house or whatever. He just called me at work saying, oh, so-and-so's coming over tonight. And I was like, oh, really? You didn't check in with me about that. You know, it's like, and we're going to do this. And then, like, at Christmas, this really pissed me off. He bought, like, this is how selfish I am. He got these big boxes for me. I was like, oh, man, maybe it's some reenacting stuff or some cool toys. It's, like, domestic stuff to hang pots and pans on. I'm like, you know, it's like, you're coming into my house telling me how to organize my house, and I need stuff to hang my pots and pans on. You gotta be shitting me, you know. It's like, you know, it's like I was getting pissed off at stuff like that, you know. It's like, you're just taking over. And I wasn't doing anything about it. And then, like, with that, we had just gotten to this point in the fourth step, and I was reminded about this resentment prayer. And then I said the prayer, and within minutes, my resentment was gone. So that's the power of this program. I mean, I was, like, ready to explode from the inside out, spontaneously combust, whatever. My hair was on fire. And this prayer took the flames out. And it worked. And we avoid retaliation or argument. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And when I'm doing that, that sets the stage, and it's a stage for a shift. One of my sponsors shared with me, you know, say the prayer and then go for a walk. You know, just leave this, wait for the shift to happen so you can actually look at yourself and divorce yourself from the other person. Thanks.
So here's the money. This last paragraph, referring to our list again. So we got to have a list to refer to it. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though the situation was not entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we were willing to set the matter straight. So this is what's not happening in the bars right now, right? There's nobody sitting on the bar stool saying, well, you know, really, here's my part in this, you know? And actually, Graham always makes the point of saying, even using the language, looking for my part in something, implies that you have a part, which is, of course, column B, which is, of course, where I've been all my life, and that's what we're trying to change. It doesn't say, look at your part, David. It just says, put out of minds the wrongs others have done. We resolutely look for David's mistakes. Where had David been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And Bill always gives us a little credit. Though the situation's not entirely your fault, he encourages me to keep reading, you know. It's like, yeah, wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything. I was minding my own business. And they, you know, we disregarded the other person entirely, including implying that they have a part in it. So when I look at this particular thing, with this little process with my wife, I have been absolutely selfish.
In my view, I've spent a very hard year, complete with like thinking I was going to lose the house, having to negotiate with the bank, dealing with three kids. I was the primary guy, shuttling them back and forth to school, cooking, doing the groceries, all this kind of, you know, I mean, I really felt like I had a hard year. And I was looking, and this is all in my own mind, in the summer when she's off of work and the kids are off of work, I'm looking at that as a little oasis. Mm-hmm. It's just right around that, just in another month, mama's going to be home and daddy can go to work. That's my personal ambition, just to be able to go to work. I don't want any, you know, I'm not looking for a trip anywhere. I just want to go to work. So, but this is selfish. I got this little fantasy that includes basically her showing up and taking care of everything so that I can get the hell out of the house. And that's my little personal ambition. And I'm being dishonest because I'm not talking about that. I haven't shared that. That's just my own little private world. And none of this is deliberate. I have to always make a point of that. Like, I don't premeditate any of this stuff. This is my natural condition. And I don't even see it until I see it in front of me in black and white. Right? So I've been selfish. I'm thinking about my time, how hard it's been, and I'm fantasizing about the relief I'm going to get. And now this little fly in the ointment has come in. Well, she's taking on a project in July. Right? I'm self-seeking. I want my time. I like having, there's two things I want. I want plenty of time and plenty of money. You know, if I had plenty of time, plenty of money, I'd be happy all the time. That's my fantasy. So I have precious little of either. And I'm frightened. I'm frightened I'm going to have to work hard. I'm lazy. I'm going to have to work harder than I planned on working. I'm going to have to keep raising my kids in the summer just like I did all winter. Oh, this is very distasteful to me. So now when I start to see this, it's my ambition, my selfishness, my desire to take it easy for a while. Like, I think going to work is a vacation. There was a poor young lady we were out to dinner about a month ago, and she was like, I'm supposed to have a husband and be a stay-home mom right now so then I can be on easy street. And I'm like, it's easier to go to work. But we all got to find that out. So anyway, now I see it's all about me. So now that I've done the inventory, I did this. It took me about a good night's sleep before I was able to get down and write it on paper. I was able to show up in front of my wife today and say, can we talk? She said yes, and I said, I've got two problems. I get hurt when you make plans without consulting me, you know, without considering me. It hurts my feelings, it upsets my equilibrium, and it just, it's dramatically upsetting. And all of that is against the backdrop of my own idea that I've had a very hard year. It's just been very difficult getting along in the world, and I've just been really upset by all that. And then she had some stuff to say, you know, and she felt like it'd been a hard year, and she is conflict phobic. She's like, I knew I should have talked to you about it, but I can't say no. And they asked me, and I was so thrilled, and I was just like, yes, I'll do it. And then I procrastinated because I knew you weren't going to like that. I made a commitment, you know, and we're all peaceful and calm and everything's fine and nothing got broken. And the gears in my head stopped turning. But I couldn't get there without getting here, without seeing my own insanity, my own selfishness, my own lack of consideration. And the inventory has given me the tool to do that. I didn't come up with this. You guys just showed me how to do it and then insisted that I do it. Sponsor's like, I can't write it for you, David. You got to write it. All right. Alfred?
Yeah, that's right. I got to do the writing and the heavy lifting here. And it's like, I'm like, some of the things that I saw was like, I'm rude and inconsiderate and not necessarily on time all the time. And I affect other people through my inaction. Like with my friend living with me, I mean, like some of the things that came out, I'm pretty sure, it's like he was divorced or getting separated and he already had a girlfriend. And I was like, well, God darn it. How does he get a girlfriend already? And I'm still swinging single, you know? It's like there's little things like that. And that would cause me to have passive aggressive tendencies. And I don't communicate well. I'm conflict avoidant too. It's like I don't want to talk about the elephant in the living room. I was afraid I was going to lose control of my house. And that's just a fancy thing. I was selfish, and I was trying to be the savior in the situation. Because he was like, he didn't have a place to live. He was going to go live with his parents. And I had lived with my parents for a year when I was still drinking. And I was like, well, that's no place for you. Come over here. And I think, you know, I wanted something out of it. And self-seeking, you know, it's like I wanted the old times where it's just us hanging out, playing games, BSing. But, you know, I've got a job. He's got a job. I travel. You know, he had to work and trying to get do stuff with his family. It's like I just make all sorts of stuff up, and I was dishonest and not telling him what was going on and not communicating. And that's like, you know, cutting at that point, it's like not what he's doing, it's what I'm doing or not doing, my actions or inactions. And let's see. And then we're willing, admitted our wrongs honestly, and willing to set these matters straight. And that's what we get to a little bit later on. Putting up the minds others had done, we look at our own mistakes. And I like what David had to say, you know, it's like the whole thing with the parts, you know, it's not like Wendy's parts is parts, you know, the old, if you remember that commercial, if not, you can look it up on YouTube, it's like beef and chicken and stuff. And anyways, it's like I have my role in it, and that's what I got to focus on, where I'm at fault, not necessarily, because if you still have a part in it, I'm still, like David said in the second column. So anyways, it's been really fun tonight, and thanks.
Thanks, Alfred. I got a hand for Alfred. Thank you for coming. All right. We have no dues or fees, but put them in here. No? All right. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
The Fellowship of the Spirit group, which meets in Gloucester, is celebrating their 11th anniversary this Saturday night, and they're at Abingdon Episcopal Church on Route 17. They're having a dinner at 6:30 and a speaker at 8.
Thank you, Alfred. Kevin?
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Kevin?
The Easy Does It Center has the after-hours meeting every night except Saturday, and it's at 10:30 p.m. So please come out and share your support, because the numbers are dwindling, and that's one of the on a consistent basis, it's one of the best meetings that I go to. And I hate to see that go by the wayside because of low attendance. So please make it out there, and we'll hope to see you there.
John?
I'm John. I'm alcoholic.
John.
Reminder of market calendar, Saturday, June the 22nd. Annual Gratitude and Action Event here in Norfolk, Denton United Methodist Church, from 9:30 to about 3. We will have state delegate support. We're going to have workshops. We're going to have a speaker. We're going to have free food.
Ooh.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Judy's a grandmother for the first time. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members.
And is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name.
Hi,
Aaron. Welcome. Anybody else? There is literature available in this attractive display. Just see one of the home group members. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. In closing, I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, which is, should be pretty easy because all the chairs stay where they are, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held tonight at Bella Pizza on Collie Avenue. They have $5 cheese pies. And don't sweat that if you don't have it. Just come on out Collie Avenue tonight after this meeting. And I just closed the book. Is anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
We have a winner. We have two winners.
Whoever gets there first.
Why don't they read one paragraph apiece? I'm sorry I'm fucking up your home group.
Go, Casey!
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Shall we close?
We shall.
He's good.
Thank you.
I hope you're
from. I bet.
I had to share that with you.
Oh, oh. That's awesome.
I really did.
I want you to watch.
Judy, will you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Alfred. You didn't grow up around here, did you?
Yes, I do.
You ain't from around here, are you?